welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Lydia Torres. Lydia Torres, a Puerto Rican poet, was born in New York City. A graduate of Hunter College and New York University, she is the author of A Weakness for Boleros from Mayapple Press. She received a poetry fellowship from the New York Foundation for the Arts, and her poems have appeared in Massachusetts Review, Bilingual Review, Hayden's Ferry Review, Calabash, Plowshares, and The Beacon Best of 2000. She lives in New York City, where she works with inner-city students in an academic intervention program. Hi, Lydia. Welcome to Prosody.
Thanks.
How about we start tonight with you reading some poems?
Great. First poem is Tune to Radio Maria. Before the arrival of the saints, she brought waxy pink and orange orchids to the office, balanced on a corner of her desk. The sight of them steadied her when the voices intruded, until she couldn't ignore the static. Radio Maria told her to place the saints in the restroom, one facing each stall, a white veil floating over the sinks. She filled water bottles with white lilies, placed the black saints under the sinks. At night, she sleeps past her sleeping husband, guarding the house keys, gives him the finger. She reaches the garden, pats the damp dirt, feeling for slugs in the cool soil. Headphones. I'm a passenger of greased movement, a crazed being in a cord. Rhythms ricochet off the tracks. The throbbing cassette numbs the parting, overrides the urge to backtrack. Drifting with the scenery, I speed into the sounds of cooking, a stew of brass, timbales, piano keys, and the conga, a close relative, my brother's palms restlessly drifting through my window at night. Every bone shakes a little in response to the sting of the cowbell, the familiar clave. Evocation of La Lupe. Extravagant hat perched on a high 60s do, eyes framed in black, shiny gold ring on each manicured finger, glitter of gems and painted skin, one hand around a puro, the other stirring coffee. Lupe, mouth open, voice of melodrama crossing Africa and the Caribbean in Spanish, and occasional translations. Se acabó means it's all over, voice that peaks, percussion joining the plea that won't dissolve when the song is done. Lupe singing, ¿Qué te pedí? The bolero that bleeds, the gasp, the tears, breath, laughter, and drums. Daphne as a drum, by Juan. In a clearing, the percussionist pauses, noticing the dark hips in a tree's shape. He puts his arms around the curve of its waist and holds on, ear pressed to the trunk. He strokes the bark with calloused hands. Daphne aches inside her home. She wants to bend and let down her hair when his palms brush her stiff back and behind. He whispers, "You are red inside, full of music." So he fells the tree, rhythms thudding, echoing from the fallen trunk. Slowly, delicately, he scoops out everything, the sap sticking to his fingers. And when it is over, her figure remains in the wooden contours, waist and hips responding below the taut skin. He taps between his legs.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Lydia Torres, reading from her collection A Weakness for Boleros from Mayapple Press. I think, especially after reading that last poem, I want to ask you a little bit about the sensuality in your work. And I think in particular because I think in a lot of poetry and literature, there's the idea that, you know, love poems and sex poems, like they're done, you know, they're well-worn paths, and I think a lot of writers actually shy away from them now because it's like, if you're not going to do something extraordinary, why even tackle those kind of topics? But your work, to me at least, comes through a sensual vein versus those other kind of ways of coming at it, love or sex. And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, like not only the themes, but you know, how you craft a poem that has a deep sense of sense and sensuality in it. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. In the poem I just read, Daphne as a Drum, which, if I'm to think of my poems, that one would stand out as one of the sensual poems. I was trying to write about the interaction in music, or the interaction that I feel, the sensual quality of music. And then that was really my first impulse in writing that particular poem. And music is a strong theme, I think, in a lot of my work. But that was the impulse for that poem. Then somehow that took me to the myth of Daphne. And that was kind of the story that came out in the poem, and how I married the music and the myth and the sense of sensuality in music that I felt, and that's what I wanted to write about in the poem.
When you're working on the poem, let's say after you've done the first draft or the first couple revisions of it, are there things that you look for in terms of, you know, kind of surfacing this sensuality? I mean, are there, it might seem kind of simplistic, but for me as a writer, I'm just curious about like certain words or certain rhythms, or, you know, how do you really look at it in terms of the crafting of that kind of sound and sense?
I definitely have a rhythm in mind. I try to have the rhythm play out, the rhythm that's in my head. Mm-hmm. I try to have it play out somewhat, if I'm successful, in the way that the poem is structured on the page. So the rhythm informs for me the way it's in this particular example, it's three line stanzas with a pause in between the three line stanzas. So I'm not really conscious of it when I'm writing, but it's definitely informing the way that I structure it on the page.
But when you're writing, is it that I guess I'm wondering about those kind of rhythms in particular, because your work is so connected to music. Is there something you hear that then you start to work out on the page, or do you start working things out on the page and then a rhythm kind of starts playing for you? Is it sometimes it happens both ways? How does the music work with the word, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I guess for me, I'm equating what I see as rhythm as the impulse to write. And that rhythm in my head is somehow connected to an idea or a thought about something to write. And then I have to stop and figure it out. And that's what I do in the writing process. You know, I put some thought into it, and it's difficult to describe, but the rhythm somehow that I sense marries or gets together with a storyline or a thought about something to write, and then somehow I can make it physical on the page, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think you're probably helping a lot of us who walk around with sounds in our heads feel so self-conscious about it any longer. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Lydia Torres, reading from her collection, A Weakness for Boleros, from Mayapple Press. Lydia, could you read some more?
Sure. A Weakness for Boleros. The bolero was composed for you and me, for all the 10-year-olds drawn to the plastic dials of the radio, drooling a bit, perhaps, swaying uncontrollably as the air in the room tensed, focused on the sweet vortex of the singer's voice, our breath caught between the violin strings and the keys of the piano, the soft beating of the cowbell in the shadows of the song. What did I know of that word, querer, as I slow danced with a clutched album cover? In another part of the city, you listened and rocked in place. Both of us dazed as the voice lifted us. Spirit boat for Arden, Park Slope and El Albaicin. The jasmine bloomed all summer, sprouting delicate white flowers that fade to purple in each corner of the room. The flowers fell into the black frame after scenting the room, a cargo of preserved moments. In my little flat in Granada, I unfolded the letters, hung them outside my window with the laundry, glanced at the photograph of the boat. The wooden pins clattered down in the courtyard. Then supper, a solitary salad, a quart of beer, a large melon, bad salsa on the radio. In the morning, the jeans were stiff, still damp from the moonlight. The letters, traveled in the spirit boat, made their way from Long Island to Spain, drifted in the Mediterranean, settled in Brooklyn. Three keys. I inherit three skeleton keys, a thick metal ring tied in a bow at the end. These keys cannot lock the bare rooms with quiet ghosts of three brothers. I call them at night, the rusted metal ringing in my pocket. My brother answers, tapping the conga skin with the tips of his fingers, lightly, not to wake my sister in the room next door, dreaming of my father. In her dreams, he is counting beds, readying rooms. Another brother taps the clave's beat. The last brother answers by barely scraping a guido. Then we are all in the same dream, alive and dead. There is the palm tree you wanted. The mangoes are so low, they graze your fingers when you try to reach them. Limes among roses, orchids. Even the roots bear fruit in our garden. The scent of guavas, the tapping and scraping of the trio.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Lydia Torres, reading from her collection, A Weakness for Boleros. Lydia, in the first section of your book, there are a number of poems that deal with death or approaching death. There's this great line, and maybe you'll read this poem later, I don't know. The body does what it must when we are must, then we are left to clean up. I guess I'm wondering, the work, it struck me first the fact that there's kind of these number of kind of death and ghost images in the first section of the book, but they're not morose. So the first thing I was thinking is, well, this is an interesting way to open a book, you know, in this particular section. But I do think it set a tone for kind of a lingering or a craving. There's also a sense of that kind of, I think, throughout the book with men in a certain sense, the kind of men that are either here but different than they used to be, or men who have died, or men who were here and have left. And I just, you know, kind of all of that lingering craving, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I think what you noticed is a kind of a sadness for losing the men that I grew up with. I come from a large family, 10 seven sisters, three brothers, and two of those brothers passed away pretty young. So I write about that, and you know, so that sadness. But it's also what you describe as lingering. I mean, I still feel that they're here, or they're looking over me in a sense. So, you know, in a way, I'm honoring them or remembering them, I hope, in the poems.
Yeah, there was almost a sense of invoking, you know, kind of like the in Greek poetry, the invoking of the muse, the bringing forward, the inspiration. And there was that sense of kind of pulling forward, you know, and I think some of this too can be differences in the way different cultures treat ghosts. You know, some cultures are very afraid of them and other ones are very welcoming and saying, you know, ghosts are actually the people who stay with us, just not in physical form any longer. And I got a sense of that, particularly in the first section of the book. When you're writing in that way, though, and especially because you're writing from a certain amount of personal experience, how do you kind of negotiate the line between sentiment and sentimentality? You know, are you ever afraid that you'll kind of tip over too much into a sense of loss that will disconnect the reader?
Sure, that's something that I have in the back of my head. I also feel like I'm representing a culture, Puerto Rican culture, in some of my work. So I also have that in the back of my head, and I'm careful, you know, to protect it or be careful of the way that I write about it, I guess. So yeah, that's definitely there, and I have a revision eye for that. When I'm writing.
Yeah, and I think what does come through, particularly in the work that deals in this kind of area also, is the familial. You know, that everybody has had loss and losses in families, whatever those may be. And I do feel that's a pretty strong line through the book as a whole, but particularly in this section, that in my mind helps to undercut any sentimentality that might make it so specific that somebody else can't tap into it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, I mean, I'm moved to write about these things that are very personal, and it's definitely a theme throughout the book, as you just said. And I can't help that, so I have to write about it, and I do write about it. But I am definitely looking at it from the perspective of, I don't want this to come off as sentimental. So hopefully in the revision process, that's being revised or changed if necessary.
It's almost like it's another sound, another theme that's in your head. You've got the music side and you've got the kind of personal. And I think that's one of the things that's, you know, really compelling and inviting about your work, as you get a sense, you know, I never assume that the I in the poem or the narrator in the poem is the author, but you do want a sense that there is a speaker and that the speaker is revealing, you know, for me, what's compelling is revealing some kind of personal experience or truth that you feel like they're talking intimately to you.
Sure.
And that's very present in your work.
Wow, thanks, Ellen.
Well, with that, why don't we hear some more?
Okay. This is the poem you just mentioned, Listening for Her. I clean my mother's body, abandoned long ago by its brain cells. She allows me to move her limbs, unfold her skin, yielding like an infant. Prying into the deepest places, she cooperates, sensing that this is good. The body does what it must, then we are left to clean up. Work that she no longer comprehends. As I wrap the diaper around her waist, I feel her lumpy belly. First home to 10 children she patiently cleaned and wrapped. My reflection meets hers. Escucha, she says. And I listen and listen, gazing into the mirror with her, listening as I did at 14, five sisters in one room, our legs outgrowing the bed frame. Escucha, we would say in the dark, as she shuffled past the door. Two guavas, Vega Baja, Puerto Rico. They rested in the car, scenting the drive to Ponce. Two pale yellow fruits plucked from the source. the tree in my aunt's garden, surrounded by orchids growing out of coconut shells and plantains hiding their tender fruit. Nanda crushed the juicy pink pulp with sugar and ice. While we sipped our limbid, a bird sucked the nectar of a guava from the tree. That night, we slept with their fragrance ripening in the dark. Blackout, New York City, August 13, 2003. All this is not unusual in DR or Iraq. The city's extension cord shorts. Afternoon offices evacuate. The focus is on feet, some people walking through burrows for the first time. We stare at our feet, elbow to elbow, eyeing packed buses. Some hitch rides on the back of trucks. An orderly mob of feet, legs pushing past fearless grocery stores. Lincoln Center, Harlem. Finally, in Washington Heights, the street party has begun. Batteries boost the curbside music, click of candlelit dominoes, night meeting a stream of car lights, congestion of bodies. Everyone is polite and briefly romantic in the dark. On my block, there's a woman selling hot pasteles on paper plate with ketchup if you want.
You're listening to Prosody. I'm Ellen Wadey, and my guest tonight is the poet Lydia Torres, reading from her collection, A Weakness for Boleros. So there's a couple different questions I want to ask. One has to do with boleros, and it has to do with the way, you know, we've talked a little bit how music is a big influence for you, but in particular, and maybe I'm just reading it my own particular way, but it seems like boleros is kind of a framing that's used in the book in the sense that there are these different people at different times. Sometimes it's an I person who's telling the poem. Sometimes it's someone else that we're looking at. And they're all kind of listening to either music or they're listening to boleros. And in a way, it creates, for me, either a neighborhood or kind of a collection of people. You know, they're all, you know, if I were to say it was a movie, it'd be like the soundtrack and the different characters at different times are kind of listening and it makes a connection. So one, you know, I'm interested in the significance of boleros for you. And then also just how it works its way through the book.
Well, that style of music or that rhythm, the bolero, which is a slow song and it's often a romantic song or a sad song, really seemed to kind of be the soundtrack, as you just said, to the collection of poems. So I didn't, you know, that was the title since I was working on this in grad school. It was always A Weakness for Boleros. So that's a great way, the way you just described it is a great way of, you know, as a soundtrack.
Do you have a weakness for boleros?
Yes. Yes, I do.
The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about had to do with the third section of the book, which seems to be a little bit more about landscape to me than you know, the first one seemed to have some intimacy and delving into depth. The second section seemed to have the music kind of more overtly came out to me in the second section. And then the third section seemed to be somewhat about place. Can you just talk about like the influence of the places that you write about, how you approach them? That kind
sure,
of thing?
Sure. It's definitely that section is about place and people. The landscapes that I feel I write from are very urban landscape. I grew up in the projects in New York City. I still live in New York City in a very mixed neighborhood. I live in Washington Heights. So that's my home. My other home that I feel that I write from is Puerto Rico, and not just Puerto Rico, but the Caribbean, because, I mean, there's so many commonalities all over the Caribbean. But yeah, in the third section, I was kind of trying to open up the landscape, or that's what the the poems represented for me. And I think the people in that landscape also.
Yeah, there's, I kind of wrote down, let me look at my piece of paper here. I wrote down that there's, which this I found really interesting, because sometimes when people write about landscape, they seem to be focusing on the specificity of like a particular place. So it'd be like, well, this poem is obviously set in Puerto Rico and this poem is obviously set in New York. And other than with a few kind of, you know, tag markers, like, you know, saying Brooklyn or something in the poem, I didn't get that sense. You know, I got the sense that place in a certain way was a constant, but there were kind of these different experiences, and the reader is meant to look more at the experience than actually at the place itself. Because there's some trains and cabs and walking, you know, so it's kind of modes of transportation through place. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about has to do with radios. There's a lot of radios in your work. And not just the ones in your head.
I mean, I think music saved my life. Growing up as a kid, I was an indoor kid and I didn't have much to do but listen to the radio and read. So that image of the radio comes up over and over because, you know, that was my friend growing up. The radio, I had my father used to find junk in the trash and fix it and sell it. And he found this old radio and I took that right away. And it was an AM radio. And that's what I listened to growing up, and, you know, snatches of music here and there on the street. Two of my brothers were musicians, so there was always music playing in the house. But, you know, I listened to all those AM stations growing up. And I still have to listen to music constantly. I can do without television, but I need to hear music constantly. Very powerful image for me.
Sure.
Personally.
Well, and I think a radio is a way, and actually I think it's different than television. Radio is a way to extend a sense of place. Because when in television, when you're actually looking at a place, it's kind of delineated, but, you know, radio kind of taps into your imagination in this way that, you know, you get transported somewhere else.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping maybe we can end with one more poem.
Okay. I'll do a train poem.
Great.
Poetry is motion, for Megan. Let's meet at 4 a.m. with paper and tape, plaster our poems over the IRT, knowing our words are crossing the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn. Bag ladies, businessmen, students will peer at our lopsided attempt to salt and pepper the subways. We want poems sold at checkout counters, cheaply priced, beside the Star and the Inquirer, near the pink and green chewing gum, the cough drops and flavored condoms, next to the news that Elvis lives in the Dominican Republic, speaks flawless Spanish, and Kojak was spotted wearing only a G-string.
The poetry of Lydia Torres. Thanks for coming to Prosody, Lydia.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf, with special thanks this week to Josh Richter and Electric Mayhem Studios in Chicago. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody. Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.